Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, January 14th. I'm Ray Graff. Joining us once again to talk about recent events, developments, and technologies in the field of climate change and alternative energy research is Dan DeLurie, Senior Fellow for Energy and Climate at Vermont Law and Graduate School and former White House Director of Clean Energy. Dan has over 25 years' experience, including as an exec with utilities and clean energy companies. If you have a question you want to chime in here today, feel free. 800-348-2551 is our number. 1-800-348-2551 or email voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org or 800-348-2551. Dan DeLurie and your calls coming up after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Here to take your climate change and alternative energy questions today is Dan DeLurie, Senior Fellow for Energy and Climate at Vermont Law and Graduate School with over 25 years' experience, including as an exec with utilities and clean energy companies. Dan is a former White House Director of Clean Energy, where he focused on the decarbonization of the nation's electricity system, a UN-accredited delegate head to the UN climate change meetings known as COPs. Dan is considered a pioneer in developing content, policy, and programs that combine climate change with new electricity technologies. You want to give us a call? Feel free. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551 or email the program at voxpop@wamc.org. Before we get rolling here, you just heard a great local newscast and you need your local news. It's what's happening in our community, across our region. It's the voices, the issues that you care about. WAMC is renewing its commitment to local news and public service, but our commitment depends on your support right now. If you give during the lockbox, you keep WAMC's fundraising efficient, your trusted programming front and center. The lockbox is open now. Help us fill it today at WAMC.org. You can make a pledge right now and still listen to the guy who's on the show, WAMC.org. And the guy on the show is Dan DeLurie. Dan, how are you?
I'm good, Ray. Happy to be here, as always.
So we had a nice quality sparring match before the show began, and now we're all loosened up and ready, huh?
Yeah, that was more than I expected in terms of pre-show.
You know what? I'm just trying to get you going and get the blood flowing here.
Good.
So we just heard Mariam Emmett's report, the news report, and one of the stories was about New York Governor Kathy Hochul, who is expanding New York's goals for nuclear energy. This was in her State of the State yesterday.
Right.
The intent was to build a new nuclear plant in upstate New York, generating about a gigawatt of power, right? But yesterday, she said that won't be enough to meet the state's needs for zero carbon energy. They're talking about more.
Right.
Nuclear power currently produces almost 3.5 gigawatts of energy in New York. So that's about a fifth of our electricity. Where should it be?
You mean how many gigawatts?
What percentage?
Oh, I don't know what that percentage should be. I mean, that it's difficult to just pick a percent for anything. I mean, solar, wind, natural gas. It ideally should be based on cost and other factors like availability and reliability and all that.
Yeah.
But in particular on cost. And then there's this other thing. Called externalities.
What do you mean an externality?
Well, externalities is an economic term, and it's something that maybe doesn't show up in the market cost of something. And perhaps the biggest externality of all is carbon dioxide or greenhouse gases. And so if that is loaded in as something into the economic calculation when you're trying to decide whether you should pursue this policy or that policy or whatever, then, you know, nuclear having zero carbon emissions, you know, sort of comes to the forefront, at least as something that ought to be considered. I mean, there are a lot of other factors. We've talked about nuclear on, I think, every show that I've ever been on here. And so there's a lot going on when you talk about nuclear, but I'll rest on that in terms of answering your question.
Our guest today is Dan DeLory, who is Senior Fellow for Energy and Climate at Vermont Law and Graduate School, and he was the former Director of Clean Energy for the White House. Have you gotten a call yet? They're going to bring you back? Is this administration going to bring you back?
I'll check my voicemail.
No, it hasn't happened yet?
No, not that I know of.
So you sent me an email, I think it was yesterday, about the future of oil versus solar. And your contention in this email is that oil is set to decline.
Well, first of all, I think we're all thinking about oil perhaps a little bit more because of what's happened in Venezuela and the way that the administration has suddenly talked about oil being so important. And oil is important, just as the other fossil fuel options are important in the present day. I mean, a very strict climate advocate might want to snap their fingers and have fossil fuels just go away and everything would be, you know, solar and wind and other renewables.
That society crumbles in about 3 weeks.
But that's obviously not realistic. And so then you look at, well, maybe we should have policies, you know, following this idea of the tragedy of the commons, that government is there to try and make something happen that is hard for individuals to do on their own or to want to do on their own. So you have government policies that try and reduce greenhouse gas emissions. But the fact is, I mean, oil is going to be here for a long time. It's not just about energy. It's used in petrochemicals and in other manufacturing and products and so on. But the key is, in which direction are we headed and what is the transition period? And we should be headed to lower greenhouse gases, and it's all about the speed of the transition, okay? And you've heard me talk about this before. I mean, right now we are reducing emissions in some ways, but we're not doing it big enough or fast enough. And so if suddenly we turn to oil again as being so important, that's a little bit counterproductive. But here's the other thing. The world is not talking about oil. The world is talking about solar. And China, the U.S. invented the solar cell, and we did nothing with it. We gave it to China to produce in a market sense. And China panels are cheap. China panels are flooding the world.
Yes. Made with lovely coal power, I believe, over there,
Again, if one could snap their fingers, you would eliminate coal in China. But the fact is that solar has now eclipsed coal. I haven't used a term yet.
In what now? In number of megawatts?
Yes.
Gigawatts?
Correct. Yes.
Worldwide?
In China. No, not worldwide.
Just China.
Well, if you're talking about coal, yes, worldwide. And I feel like I'm jumping around here, and I apologize.
That's okay.
But I mean, in the U.S. last year, and this is another part of this story, the U.S. Increased coal production and use. And maybe I'll use coal to put a finer point on this. The coal plants are being kept open in the U.S. by administrative fiat. The administration has declared an energy emergency for the country, and they have ordered coal plants to stay open in certain parts of the country. And the owners of those coal plants, the regulators in that state, do not want them to stay open.
All of
because
them?
They're too costly and they are imposing extra cost on ratepayers. And so if you gave me a coal plant today for free.
Okay, you want one?
No, but if you gave me one, offer me one for free, I would not take it because it costs too much to operate and too much to make electricity.
Okay, why does it cost too much to operate? Is it regulations?
It's regulations and the fact that they're old. The plants are old. No one's built a new coal plant since I don't know when. So it's both of those factors and probably some others.
Dan DeLory is our guest today. It's climate change and alternative energy. The number is 800-348-2551. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. Anything else you want to bring up before we take a break and then hit the phones?
Yes, I will bring up the fact that I've moved my newsletter to Substack.
Oh, and fancy pants. Ah, oh, good for you.
So for those of you out there who would like to take a look at my newsletter,
which
or
is
subscribe
great.
To it.
It's really, it's both informative and entertaining.
Thank you. And so you can go to substack.com and enter my name and you can see it and sign up for it.
How do you spell Delury?
D-E-L-U-R-E-Y.
Good answer. Let's take a break. 800-348-2551. We'll get to the phones and the email bag in a moment. You know, you get down, you get funky. There's Lalo Schifrin with Dizzy Gillespie. It's lovely. 800-348-2551 is the number. Dan DeLury's here. It's alternative energy and climate change and whatnot. And let's go to the email bag, Dan. You ready?
Sure.
All right, here we go. Barbara writes in, I never hear of any projects on tidal power in our region trying to harness the tides for the electrical grid. Why not? Such a predictable, clean source of power. And that's from Barbara.
I'm glad you brought that up, Barbara. Thanks for the question. Tidal power has this sounds funny as I say it, I guess it's ramped up and down, which is what obviously the tides do. But there was a time not too long ago when tidal power looked like it might be economical, especially in high tidal areas like the Bay of Fundy and Nova Scotia and so on. But it's just never really made it. The thing that last time I looked was perhaps making it was instead of using tides is to use wave action, which is a
little
bit
like a hair shampoo. What is wave action?
No, well, it's where you put a technology that floats on the surface of an area that has a lot of oscillation, a lot of waves, and that movement will generate electricity.
Okay.
Again, I that's as far as I'm going to go on that, but that is a thing that people are looking at.
Pete writes in, hello, can you comment on the differences between mini split and monoblock heat pumps? I've never heard of a monoblock heat pump.
And neither have I. I'm sorry, Pete. I'm not sure what that is. The only thing here's what it might be, okay, because I have heat pumps, as you know, Ray, and so I have mini splits in a couple of rooms. Those are the kind that, you know, you see in your dentist's office and other places. They're high on the wall.
Yeah.
But in my kitchen, I have a larger one that sits on the floor.
Oh, really? Maybe that's what he's talking about.
Maybe up against the wall. But that was installed just strictly through a BTU calculation on how much heat was needed in that room.
Oh, interesting.
And so that's what they installed. So if you're talking about that, Pete, it's just a question of size. I mean, one of my mini splits is larger than the other. Again, just based on the square footage and the calculation as to how the air flows around my rooms.
Yeah, okay. And what, are you one of those people who, I'm sure you are, because you're so careful about such stuff, who will turn off one room when you're not there?
Yeah, I fluctuate. Well, I've told you before, I don't have any heat on my second floor.
Oh, that's right. That'll keep costs down.
I didn't install any mini splits up there because I'm not up there that often.
Yeah.
So I'd rather have the heat go up there. And as I've said before, for anybody, regardless of what kind of heat you have and what kind of zonage you have, it's okay to use an electric space heater in the room that you're in. Let's say you're in a room and you're sitting at your desk or you're watching TV or whatever, then instead of turning up the whole house, use a space heater.
I can see how these could actually work for new construction, especially that is really, really well insulated. But for an older house, it can be really tough in the cold, cold months of the Northeast. Just got my electric bill, and we have mini splits. It was a whopper. Let me tell you something. We had a cold snap, and I think until electricity rates are under control, it's going to be a hard sell.
Yes, but I want to point out, and this goes throughout the year, there was a lot of surveying and focus, I don't know how many years ago, on the price per kilowatt hour around the country.
Yeah.
And so some of the places that had a low kWh or price per kWh actually had higher bills because of air conditioning. And so it's kind of important to look at your total energy bill. And so if you've gone to heat pumps, then yeah, your electricity bill is going to be higher, but is something else lower? But, you know,
Not natural gas. I mean, natural gas is lower.
Well, if it, what I mean is, if you're using heat pumps for heat, then you must not be using natural gas for heat.
Well, we have, listen, our house is ancient, so I have a backup on demand that fires the furnace. And so that'll kick on when it gets really cold. I mean.
Yeah. But you're using, that's not your primary heating source.
Right.
So again, it's kind of important to look at your total energy bill. And I'm not saying that they're not going up. That's not what I'm saying.
And listen, you don't work for the utilities anymore, but I got to tell you something. Some of these fees, don't get me started. Let's go to the phones. Oh, let's do a couple more emails and then we'll do that.
Okay.
Jim writes in, how do we convince people that nuclear power is necessary? We are not Russia making a Chernobyl. Aren't there safe ways to do this? Well, France has been doing it very safely for a very long time.
Yeah, as anyone who listens to me on the show knows that I am pro-nuclear, and I am simply because of greenhouse gases. That's the currency, in my mind, that we need to all subscribe to.
Now, to be honest, and you've told us this on the show, back in the Bonnie Raitt, Jackson Brown days of no nukes, you are on board and a flag waver for that. You changed your tune.
I did. When I learned about climate change and when I learned about greenhouse gases, I turned on a dime. I did a 180 and I said, holy cow, that's what matters.
You know,
that's what matters in the long run. And if we don't take care of greenhouse gas emissions, then we're not going to like where we end up.
And they refired up Three Mile Island, right?
That's right. That's not the only one. There are a couple others. Yeah.
You know, Cuomo closed Indian Point downstate.
Right.
That, I guess, is just too old to reconstitute?
Yeah. If they go so far in terms of decommissioning and dismantling, then it's a little bit too late. But, you know, safety was mentioned in that email. And so no one should deny that there is a safety issue with nuclear. But no one should also not deny, I don't think I said that right, but they should also not deny that there are safety problems with everything. Natural gas pipelines and the distribution network and just the use of natural gas has a safety issue. But it's unfortunate that we don't have national policy and a national repository for nuclear waste, but that's something we should have. But it's not like there isn't the ability to store on site, which is what the rest of the world does.
All right, let's go to the phones. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. Carl, brilliant and residing in Katona. Carl, you're on the air.
Hey, good morning, good afternoon, good evening. How are you?
Hey.
I'm a sustaining member.
Hey, welcome and thank you.
I'm a sustaining member of WAMC proudly. And
nice,
I have a question about solar shingles. I have a roof that is over 30 years old, the shingles on it. And it certainly needs replacement. And I'm wondering whether or not solar shingles, either the Tesla or the GAFs, are a worthwhile alternative to think about instead of using regular shingles. Do those systems work, and how well do they work? Do you have any thoughts on that?
Carl, I'm sorry to say that we got this question on the last show or something, and I said to myself,
homework?
That's right, I didn't do my homework. But there was an article that I think I even sent to you, Ray, that it was an article about Tesla. I think I included it in my newsletter.
Oh, yeah.
And it was about the Tesla solar shingles that are just not catching on, but I don't remember. I just don't remember the substance of that. But, Carl, I'd be happy to. I mean, my email is DeLurieDan, no dot between, DeLurieDan@gmail.com. And I'd be happy to send you that article about Tesla shingles.
Carl, I got to tell you, I have been wanting to do this for a long time. I don't have any money, so I'm not going to do it right now. But the brilliance of solar shingles is great as long as they last somewhere near as long as normal shingles. And you know what I mean? It's like if you have to replace them every 10 years, it's not going to be worth it. But you're an engineer, Carl. Why don't you make them?
The disparity here is that the Tesla shingles are warrantied out for 25 years. If you buy a regular regular old-fashioned shingles, which aren't old-fashioned anymore, they're high-tech too, you can get up as much as twice that, 50 years.
Wow.
My problem is that although I live very close to New York City, I'm only about 45 miles out of Times Square, we lose our power all the time, Ray.
Yeah,
and
I remember.
My Honda generator gets a lot of use. So, and we're also worried about whether or not the price of electricity will go through the roof.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
you know, I guess you got to think about these things.
Yeah, I'm not a shill for Tesla, but, you know, since you mentioned Tesla shingles, the other thing is the Tesla Powerwall. You know, when you talked about having
right.
a backup and have, you know, instead of a generator, that's always an option. So.
Yeah, the Powerwall is worthy of about 4.5 days when it's fully charged. My problem is that we've had, especially during situations like Sandy and other storms here, we've had outages that have gone as long as 14 days.
Yeah.
So,
wow.
You know, it's kind of crazy. We're NYSEG, by the way, although there's also Con Ed
yeah.
in this region. And
yeah.
It's just very unreliable. So, all right, listen, I'll drop you an email, and thank you very much.
Wait a minute,
okay.
Carl. I got a question for you. Is the Muscoot Tavern
oh, yeah.
still slinging pizzas over there?
Oh, absolutely. It's been renovated, and, yeah, a very, very popular place. It's right next to the famous, Ray, King Cone.
I remember King Cone, but I tell you one thing, the pepperoni and fresh garlic 30-plus years ago, I still remember it. That was good stuff. Hey, Carl, thanks for the call, man, and thanks for being a sustainer. Be like Carl, folks. Go to WAMC.org and make your pledge in the lockbox right now. Let's go to Joan in Schenectady. Hello, Joan.
Hello, Ray, and I'm another sustaining member
Yay,
of WAMC.
Joan.
And a very happy fun drive volunteer. I'll see you next Friday.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
I can't wait. You guys keep me sane, and that's saying a lot, I'm
yeah,
sure.
It sure is.
I know I've spoken to both of you before, Ray and Dan. Thank you for your brilliance. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I guess I have to say anti-nuclear because nobody has satisfied me with the waste.
The waste
problem.
Yeah.
Something, yeah. I mean, it just lasts. I'm a seventh generation kind of heart. If it's still going to hurt people seven generations down the road, block off that road and put a big old warning sign on it. So.
Okay.
Until we reduce our consumption, we have fewer and fewer choices for people like me who say, no, no nuclear, don't put oil underneath our rivers, etc. What can we do to get the message out that the less we consume, the less we have to worry about these ongoing problems.
All right. Joan, there's a fair point. Go ahead, Dan.
Yeah, Joan, you've made a couple of fair points. And the first one I want to pick up on, and I've written about this a little bit, is that we do seem to have forgotten about energy efficiency, at least in the public discourse. You know, people are still looking to reduce their bills and so on, but you're talking about the larger reason for energy efficiency, and that is that it reduces the amount of energy that has to be produced, and that's a good thing. And yet, support for energy efficiency, not just all of the federal government support that's been eliminated, but even at the state level, is not there in terms of what it used to be. And that obviously doesn't make sense to me, and I would think to anyone else. It sort of leads to what do we do about that? And there are energy efficiency advocates that are out there trying to restore some of that energy efficiency policy and incentives and so on. There are some good organizations out there to support if anyone wants to do that, and I'd be happy give people my thoughts on that. The other thing, though, that you mentioned, Joan, is the importance of intergenerational legacy. And it's interesting because you and I both subscribe to that, but we're approaching it a little bit differently in that I believe strongly about that, but I first look at greenhouse gases and climate change. And so my intergenerational legacy is to reduce greenhouse gases and to stem climate change so that my ancestors have, I'll use the trite phrase, a better world to live in. Mm. Now, you're correct also in that, you know, you're concerned about your your descendants having to deal with nuclear waste. But I'll at this point say what I've said on the show before is I think that I would trust government and technology to solve the issue of concentrated nuclear waste better than the challenge of trying to reduce greenhouse gases from billions of different endpoints around the world.
All right, Joan. Hey, listen, Joan. Okay. I'll tell you what, I'll give you Dan's personal number when you come for the fun drive. And you can call him during a break and, you know, let him have it, all right? So we'll see you next week.
We don't get breaks on the fun drive. Love you guys. Bye.
See you, Joan. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. Dan DeLore is our guest. He's being very kind to everyone today. And that's good. Not me necessarily, but we'll see what happens in the next break. Because during the breaks, we have been at each other's throat the entire time. Paul is in Stone Ridge. Paul.
Thank you, gentlemen, Ray and Dan. So I was surprised to hear Governor Hochul embracing the idea of nuclear. At some point, we're going to have to evaluate the cost of encapsulating, transportating, and storing the waste. Spent uranium is very nasty stuff, and I think that we're not hearing the cost, put the projected cost of that down the road, the intergenerational cost, if you will. I'm wondering what Dan has to say about that, because actually that will offset the savings and the efficiency of nuclear generating power if we look at the real cost of preserving and storing the waste safely. Your points, please.
Yeah. Earlier in the show, I mentioned, I think it was in the intro discussion that Ray and I had, and I mentioned the idea of externalities and it referred to the idea of how you do a cost-benefit calculation in government, anyway, to determine what to do. What if you're doing it on a proposed regulation? How do you decide whether to limit the pollutant to level A, to level B, to whatever? And so, in economic principles and theory, you try and look at the known costs, like how much it would cost for technology, for example, to enforce this regulation. But then there are the unknown costs, because the difference between level A and level B could be, you know, hundreds of thousands of lives being shortened by the different pollutant levels. Now, again, that may sound like mumbo jumbo, but what's the alternative? The role of government is to try and look beyond the hard costs and to try and take into consideration the other costs. And I hope I haven't strayed here in applying this to your question. But as I said to Joan, the previous caller, there's a lot more going on with nuclear from a policy perspective and every other perspective in my mind than just looking at the nuclear waste issue.
Paul.
It occurs to me that you earlier mentioned, Dan, that other countries have successfully managed nuclear power generation. You mentioned France, and I was actually at a nuclear power plant in Canada during doing some work years ago in another career. And I would trust a stable government to manage the waste. But what we tend to do in the U.S. is commercialize everything, monetize the power generation. So I would be very leery about a commercial entity managing the waste of a nuclear power plant, to be quite honest.
Yeah, that's a very good point. I mean, I'm with you. I would rather have the government do that. I'd rather have a central government depository. It's been debated for decades about Yucca Mountain in Nevada.
We've never had it. We've never had a government-managed nuclear generating plant. It's always been
commercial. The plant itself.
Right.
Yeah, the only exception would be...
And the waste disposal, which is part of the deal.
Yeah, TVA would be a quasi-exception to that, Tennessee Valley Authority. But I take your point that in the case of other governments, you have largely a state-owned entity that is the utility, like Electricité de France in France.
All right, we have to take a break here, Paul. We're overdue, but thanks for the call. Great one.
Yeah, thanks,
800-348-2551 is our number. It's Dan DeLore today, and we talk climate change and alternative energy. Got to get a nuclear physicist on here one of these days because I want to talk about breeder reactors. They use less uranium, and so that might mitigate some of the waste. All right, let's take a break. We'll be back. Grant Green on the guitar there at Iron City on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. It's Dan DeLore Day today, and it's always great to have Dan on the program. By the way, how are things going up in Vermont? How are things at the school?
Good.
Yeah, you're going to be going back, or are you on sabbatical or whatnot?
Yeah, I'm more or less on sabbatical.
All the time? Yeah. Did they fire you?
No. I'm a senior fellow there.
So what does that mean? You just sit around?
No, it means sometimes I do guest lectures.
Ah.
It means sometimes I engage and involve students in projects that I'm working on.
Oh, cool.
And I'm sort of an ambassador for the school, and I appear on things like this.
What a great gig. I'll tell you what, I want to be senior fellow at WAMC and just walk around. I'll do a couple projects. You know what? I'm going to talk to the boss right after the show. Brian writes in, what are your thoughts, Dan, on plug-in patio solar systems? Will they be available in around here anytime soon?
Oh, yeah. They're coming on strong. And just so everyone knows what we're referring to here, these are basically a solar panel which you hang on the railing of your balcony.
They're big in Germany and such.
Yeah. That's where this is just new news as of this past year. And it is, you basically just hang it or prop it up against something and plug it in and boom, you're getting solar.
Okay, so wait, now explain to me, are all these people who have patio solar, are they off the grid or are they just feeding the grid?
No.
They're just feeding the grid.
Yeah, or else, now you're asking me a question that I need to think about here, whether or not there's any net metering going on. I think they're using it in their house.
So it can be used directly. That's interesting.
I got more homework than I thought here, Ray. Sorry.
I see these ads on TV for okay, here's a generator with a solar panel and it'll run your refrigerator, and the panel's not very big. Well, that's the thing.
Yeah, well, look, there have been solar panels for a long, long time. As you go down the highway, you can see them,
sure,
on a particular lamppost or something.
Yeah,
and so,
signs.
Yeah, and so they're feeding directly into whatever that device is nearby. But, this reminds me of something that I meant to say, to put the finest point on it, back when I talked about, coal, oil, and solar. And this is not my quote. It's Bill McKibben, the famous author and environmentalist,
right,
when he talked about this same issue of solar sort of, taking over because of its cost. And his quote is, it takes a lot to beat just pointing a sheet of glass at the sun and making electricity.
Okay. This is from Anonymous. In Worthington, Mass., there is a large discussion about adding solar farms on land with battery storage. One argument against this is that coal is now much cleaner than solar. Could you talk about that and also give us a link to information where people can get real data, not the fake stuff being floated around? Also, is the fear of groundwater contamination from a fire justifiable if the battery storage facility caught fire. Note, we have a very small volunteer firefighting force in our town, and the storage facility is on the ground. The storage facility is on ground that feeds our water supply, and that's from Worthington, Mass. Anonymous.
I need to go back to, did the writer say coal?
Sentence two. One argument against it is solar is with okay. Let's start again. I'll read you the first two lines. In Worthington, Mass., there was a large discussion about adding solar farms on land with battery storage. Okay? One argument against, says Anonymous, is that coal is now much cleaner than solar. I saw you jump out of your chair when I read it. Go ahead.
Well, no, I mean, I talked about that earlier, saying that if you gave me one, I wouldn't take it. Because, I mean, coal is, even though we saw an uptick in coal usage here in the U.S. last year, coal is not coming back. It just can't. And as to clean, I know that clean coal is a phrase that's been tossed around a lot in this administration and back when it was the same administration before, but there really is no such thing as clean coal. If the clean, well, actually, I mean, you know that
calm
I normally...
Calm down. Take a deep breath. Just take a deep breath.
You know that I normally define clean in terms of greenhouse gases.
Right.
And we rarely talk about the other things, the other pollutants like SOx and NOx and toxins and mercury and all of that. And coal has all of those. And so there's no such thing as clean coal, I'm sorry to say.
Okay.
So there's that part of the question.
What about the batteries? Now, this has been a legitimate discussion in the Hudson Valley and around New York State. There was a fire. I want to say Warwick. I'm not sure. But recently, and, you know, what do you think about this, the possibility of this battery storage facility, and are they safe?
I'm going to be hesitant here because I know there have been some fires. There have been, you know, fires. It goes back to what we talked about with, is anything really safe when it comes down to energy and involving all of the mechanics and technology and equipment and all of that. But I do think that, you know, locally, when you have more solar farms around, that the local fire department, it is a new thing that they need to be knowledgeable about. But I wouldn't subscribe to the fact that it's any more prevalent in terms of a fire than it is other things.
I don't know. I mean, to me, storage makes sense. If you're going to use solar, you have to have storage,
right?
And
I presume we're talking about battery storage. I'm pretty sure that's what we're talking about here.
What else could you have? Huge capacitors? I mean, what do you mean?
No, I mean, there are all sorts of other types of storage that are coming online now.
That aren't batteries?
Yeah, or there are different kinds of batteries
understand.
So on.
Okay.
But there's also, I mean, it sort of gets into the grid scale storage. So forget I mentioned that because it just confuses things here.
Frankly, I've been confused since the get-go. I don't know. Let's go back to the phones and we'll go to a sainted person in Clintondale. Let's go to Catherine. Hello, Catherine. You're on.
Good afternoon. I would like to talk about heat pumps.
Okay.
I installed 5 heat pumps in my house to the tune of $15,000. Then I proceeded to try to use them to heat my house. And my electric bills were like $2,000 a month in the winter months. That's with having solar on my garage roof. I hate to think about what the bills would have been had I not have some solar. As far as I'm concerned, they're so inefficient. Why would you release the heat in your room 1 foot from the ceiling?
Interesting.
It's a crazy design.
Oh, you mean because
and your feet are cold.
Catherine,
I had to spend $5,000 to go back and have a new oil tank put in my basement.
Uh-oh. Now Dan jumped out of his seat again.
No, that's
Catherine, I agree with you to some extent, although my bills have never reached $2,000. It was pretty high. It was pretty high last month.
Yeah, I mean,
mine did with the heat pumps. I'm just sorry to say it. I mean,
I'm sorry.
If they had been more efficient, I'd be happy.
Okay, Dan, but, what do you think?
Well, first of all, I'm sorry, Catherine, because I mean, no one should have to sacrifice comfort, you know, to try and save on their energy bill or even to make a contribution to reducing climate change and so on. So the first thing that strikes me here, though, and again, I don't want to I don't know your, you know, your house and how it's laid out. I don't know any of that. And so I don't want to get into that, really. But that was a pretty cheap price for five mini splits. I think you said 15,000.
Right.
Don't say the company. We're not allowed.
Yeah, no, that's, I mean, that's a pretty...
And two of them I've never used because they're in rooms we don't use in the house. It's a
yikes.
Big house.
Yeah. I mean, speaking from my own experience with heat pumps, I mean, the idea is that if you just turn them on a cold day and they haven't been on or they've been set so low, it's not insta-heat like other forms of house heating is. But after... you know, I'll say a couple of days, if not a day, and as the air starts to move around, and I take your point about these mini splits being high on the wall.
I think that's a brilliant point.
And you know, and heat rises, as we know, but that gets back to the circulation of the air. Yeah, I mean, you've raised good points, and I'm sorry that you're having that experience. You know, it'd be interesting to know the BTU settings on your heat pumps, because you heard me talk earlier how my three heat pumps are all a different level of BTU production, and that was based on some pretty good calculations that my company did. In fact, I was surprised at how sophisticated those calculations were. But I'm sorry to hear this, Catherine. I wish you the best. I'm sorry.
Catherine, and thank you for being...
Yeah, my people were not exactly a lot of help. The people who installed it.
Don't say their name.
But also...
Go ahead.
I'm a geologist. I worked in the petroleum field for a number of years, so I feel a little guilty about burning oil and using, well, the... gasoline in our cars and stuff.
Yeah.
But I also worked on nuclear waste.
Interesting.
And Yucca Mountain was the answer. The problem is people don't want all of that nuclear waste to be transported from the nuclear power plants where it's currently stored across the country to Yucca Mountain. Yucca Mountain, they actually built cavities where they were going to put the waste.
Yeah.
That's right. Right,
not recently,
but yet Nevada had a very powerful senator in the U.S. Senate by the name of Harry Reid, and he didn't like it.
Well, he's not around anymore.
He is not around
anymore.
Oh,
he's gone.
Yeah. Well, he's
gone. Let's try again.
hey, Catherine. Go ahead.
Well,
Dan,
no, I was going to say. You know what we haven't noted is, I mean, back to Governor Hochul, and I don't know anything more than what I've read and the same that everyone else has read in terms of a number of New York upstate municipalities having expressed interest in hosting a nuclear power plant.
Right. Yeah, I think St. Lawrence and maybe Jefferson. Yeah. I'm not sure. Catherine, thank you for calling, and thanks for being a longtime friend of this radio station. We really appreciate it. 800-348-2551. We go now to Joe in Canaan. Joe, you're on.
Yeah, I think I got a great question to segue into the battery storage.
Okay.
I live in northwestern Connecticut, and we have a very unique situation where we have the Housatonic River. And upstream in the river, we have a hydropower plant, which is obviously very you know, clean method of producing electricity. The excess electricity that is produced through the night when it doesn't go into the grid, further downstream, they pump water out of the river up a mountain and into storage up in a lake. And then when we need the electricity during the day, the water comes down out of the lake that's above the power plant, which then produces electricity that we use during the day, which is obviously clean energy storage.
Yeah.
No battery involved.
That, yeah.
Yeah, it's called pump storage. And there's also one on...
Now,
there's one in the Deerfield River also that I've actually visited.
That's a very unique situation with, you know, geographically. A couple of years ago, I don't know where I saw it, but using the same concept where, excess electricity is being produced, like I say, at night, the energy is used to raise concrete blocks up into a tower.
Huh.
And then when the energy is needed, using a pulley system, when the energy is needed, the concrete blocks come down, which generates electricity.
Wow, what a cool idea.
I mean, it's basic.
And those towers, now you say, well, those are pretty ugly on the horizon. Well, those towers can be underground.
Genius. So you're using potential energy and
exactly.
Amazing.
It's physics 101.
Amazing.
And here's what I would say for anyone who is interested in this whole area. There's a new trade association called the Long Duration Energy Storage Council, LDES Council. Mm-hmm. And there you will see the new technologies that I started to talk about in that other answer. And it's kind of fascinating what's out there today.
Joe, thanks a lot. Very quickly, we'll go to Teresa in Menands, and then we'll probably have to wrap it here. Teresa, go ahead.
Hey, guys. I'm learning so much for this this show. It's really great. I have a unique situation. I have a spring that runs under my property, and it runs into a culvert that the water flows out of it very strongly, 24/7, 365 days a year. And I've been fantasizing about putting some kind of a paddle or something in there and trying to harness some energy. I have an electric car. I'm thinking, oh, wouldn't it be cool if I could power my car with it or something? Is there anything like that, a kit that you can get or some way you can harness that kind of energy?
To do your own hydro. Amazing.
Yeah, I mean, those kind of kits have never really escaped the pages of popular mechanics, and I think they ought to. I'm not that familiar with them, but, I mean, there's two things with water. One is falling water, which, is potential energy, and it creates energy as it falls, and then there's flowing water. And so a friend of mine a number of years ago was trying to fool around with, what you could even put in a pipe that would, somehow turn and create electricity just from the water flowing through it. But I have not seen anything about that in a long time. So I think if you looked into, I don't know what the Live Off the Grid magazines are. I know they're out there.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
I'm in.
But I think I think that's where you're going to see something like that they call it micro hydro in terms of trying to put something on just a little brook or stream.
Hey, Teresa, we got to wrap it up here, but thank you very much for the call. Dan DeLore, once again, if people want to find out about your newsletter or whatever, go ahead.
Substack.com. Dan DeLore. It's called Climate Time.
And DeLore is spelled DeLurey.
Yes,
Climate
it is.
Time. Yeah. Hey, man. Thanks for being here.
Oh, always a pleasure.
We will see you next time. Support comes from Temple Sinai, Saratoga Springs, an open congregation welcoming the Jewish community and visitors for Shabbat, holiday services, and providing religious school, cultural programs, and more. SaratogaSinai.org. Before we sign off here, I forgot to say happy 82nd birthday to Jim in Adams, Massachusetts, who was on hold here for the show. We didn't get to him, but happy birthday, buddy, and we'll talk to you soon. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Ed Rosen screened the calls. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, this is timely. It'll be Tax Tips with Judy Cahey and Dawn Doherty. We will see you tomorrow at 2:00.